Part 4, Chapter 10, In Which the Toilet Meets the Man. I am I, and I am the other. The train Harvey boarded was an old one, with standard 6-seat compartments, and the captain was alone until a young woman entered and sat down across from him. Her history unfolded as he took on her personality. She had been born and raised in Florence, was 23 years old, and was on her way home after interviewing for a job as a costume designer in Rome. Her beauty was such that Harvey found it impossible to keep from staring, but she treated him with complete indifference, pretending he wasn't there. As he continued to stare, he noticed the first traces of wrinkles at the corners of her eyes. "Perhaps old age will be her savior," he thought. When they passed Orvieto, an indispensable urge led Harvey to the WC. The unisex bathroom was unoccupied, and as soon as the captain sat, he was struck with the thoughts of all who had sat there before him. He imagined their bottoms, the round ones, the flat ones, the bony ones, and the small children's buns that almost slipped through, and as he imagined, he took on the personality of the toilet seat. It was hard, but not uncomfortable, and effectively angled, and as he gazed up at the world from his new perspective, he thought he might finally get an honest look at the human race. But before long, he was struck with a feeling of déjà vu when a man entered and sat on his face. There was something strangely familiar about his bearing, and he seemed to be laboring in his chore, as if somehow he were pushing Harvey out of the seat. But the harder he pushed to become Harvey, the harder Harvey pushed back. The two continued to struggle, grunting and moaning as they did, until suddenly, joyfully, the captain smiled from cheek to cheek. "Is that you, Harvey?" asked the toilet. "Is that you, Harvey?" echoed the man. "Harvey!" cried the toilet. "Harvey!" cried the man. Somewhere, somehow, Harvey must have been on that train and used that toilet before. He had found himself. His search was over. He had finally slipped back into his form in the future. Or at least he hoped he had been transported forward, and not to a form in his past. Just then he heard a voice outside. "Harvey," said the voice, "are you all right?" "Mahogany?" cried Harvey and Harvey in unison. The captain rose from the seat, and the two that were suddenly one stepped out of the WC. "My friend!" cried Harvey. A father accepting the return of an only son, the child of his old age, after 20 years' absence in a foreign country, could not have been more delighted than Harvey was delighted when he embraced Mahogany, kissing him all over as though he had come back from the dead. Though Mahogany was surprised by the degree of the captain's excitement, he was not one to criticize another man's pleasure, so he embraced the captain with equal affection, then led him down the corridor until they found a compartment. An elderly woman looked up and smiled when they took their seats. The captain began to talk with her and found out she was a costume designer in Rome on her way to Florence to vote. Footnote. Italians can only cast votes in the city where they were born. As she spoke, Harvey realized that she was the same woman he had been riding with a few minutes before, but since his leap in the bathroom, she had aged 33 years. The imminent crow's feet he had noticed before were now well worn and deep. "It was the one law we must all obey," he thought, "the law of aging. Though many of life's woes are distributed unequally, some receiving more, some less than their share, no one can escape the ruin of aging, the challenge of accepting you will never be what you once were, the utter helplessness as the body rots away." But despite her physical deterioration, this woman seemed to have changed for the better. Gone was the arrogant conceit that had marked her before. She was now warm and gentle. Harvey liked her infinitely more, and she liked him, and she began to flirt with him, until a younger woman entered the compartment and stole Harvey's attention. Mahogany, too, was taken with a new arrival. "'È libero questo?' she asked, signaling the seat next to Mahogany. "'Che bella donna!' thought Mahogany, "'as beautiful as any worthy of the name, "'and surely the daughter of another beautiful donna.' "'Sono Irothea,' she said, offering Mahogany her hand. "'Mahogany,' he said, accepting it. She was a student who had been visiting relatives in Brindisi and was returning to Florence, where she studied and taught yoga. When they reached Florence, she invited them to stay with her at the Pensione Merlini, and after they were settled, Irothea suggested they go to dinner. It was raining when they left the pension, and though Harvey was overjoyed at finding his friend, he was shocked by the traffic and crowds. It was as if the world had tripled its population in an instant. Mahogany, though equally disgusted, had not jumped from 1980 to 2013, and did not share his friend's astonishment. He was more interested in the heavenly aroma coming from the Pizzeria Sainati. "'Mmm, capricciosa,' said Harvey, taking a bite. "'Do you want to go to Valjalje tomorrow?' asked Irothea. "'My grandparents live there.' "'What do you think?' said Mahogany, turning to Harvey. "'Do you want to go to Valjalje?' "'Valjalje?' echoed Harvey. "'We can go to Nice the day after, okay?' "'Okay,' echoed Harvey, and the next morning they took the train to Siena. "'So you are the famous Captain Harvey,' said Irothea's grandmother when they arrived. "'I have read your novel.' "'You have?' said Mahogany. "'Who hasn't?' she said, "'though I would have to say that the text pales in comparison to the movies.' "'The movies?' said Mahogany. "'The Raven and the Return of the Raven,' she replied. "'Of course,' said Mahogany. "'I saw the Raven in Mantua.' "'Yes,' Irothea's grandmother continued. "'And I can hardly wait to see what they do with parts 3 and 4.' "'Parts 3 and 4?' said Mahogany. "'Do you have a copy?' "'On the table,' she said, pointing to a leather-bound book. Mahogany rushed to open it and read the title page. "'The Adventures of Captain Harmon, Parts 3 and 4, by Ronaldo Dodici.' "'Captain Harmon?' said Mahogany. "'Yes,' said the grandmother. "'Mr. Twelves has been so slow to finish his own Parts 3 and 4 that another author has written the sequel.' "'But that's plagiarism,' said Mahogany. "'Of course it is,' she said. "'But no one cares. In fact, Mr. Dodici's work is so superior to that of Mr. Twelves that Mr. Twelves himself asked Mr. Dodici to rewrite the original Parts 1 and 2. Of course, your names were changed.' "'Rewrite Parts 1 and 2?' cried Mahogany. "'He can't be that good.' "'But he is,' said the grandmother, "'particularly when it comes to the balance of discord.' Footnote. Samuel Taylor Coleridge, in his essay, What is Art?, has written, "'Imagination reveals itself in the balance or reconciliation of opposite or discordant qualities.' "'The balance of discord?' echoed Mahogany. "'Exactly,' said Jocasta. "'In the Twelves text, I never got past the first 2 chapters. They were so disjointed and chaotic. But the Dodici version went so smoothly that it drew me in at once. Why don't you read a little? Tell me if you don't think that the apocryphal first part isn't an improvement.' Mahogany turned to the first page and began to read. Chapter 1, in which the captain meets Plywood Edwards. Oh, to be as a housefly, buzzing around the putrid fumes of a dung heap. Such were Captain Harmon's thoughts instants before he fell from a garbage truck into a puddle of oily water. A passing delinquent noticed his fall and approached to pick his pocket. "'Who are you?' the man asked. "'Plywood Edwards,' replied the captain. "'Plywood Edwards!' exclaimed the man. "'So am I!' The two were disappointed that in such a common place they had both met someone they knew, and, being that they were the same person, they had nothing to say. "'This is great,' said Mahogany. Let me see parts 3 and 4. Jocasta handed him the sequel, and Mahogany flipped to chapter 10 of the 4th part. Here's where I pick up parts 3 and 4, said Mahogany, and begin to read. And here is where I read about myself picking up parts 3 and 4, and begin to read. You know, Harvey, maybe we should get a new author.
A new author? Echoed the captain.
Sure, said Mahogany. We could go on strike, and hold out for a happy ending.
And fewer beatings? Said Harvey.
Of course. And a promise that Irothea will not be killed like Adelphine. Maybe even you could find true love. I saw on the news last night that both Mr. Dodici and Mr. Twelves are signing copies of their book in Florence, said Jocasta, if you want to find them. The next day, Harvey, Mahogany, and Irothea returned to Florence in search of Roland Twelves and Ronaldo Dodici, who they were told were sharing an apartment near the Ponte Vecchio.
Hey, said Mahogany, spotting a man by the river. Isn't that R.T.?
I don't know, said Irothea. I've never met him.
R.T., thought Harvey, remembering Prometheus, Thales, Hesiod, and his friends in the past.
I'm sure it is, said Mahogany. Let's go see. When they descended the bank, they saw that it was R.T.
My friend, said R.T., embracing the captain.
My friend, he replied.
You look well, said R.T.
You look well, replied the captain.
You haven't changed in 33 years, said R.T.
You haven't changed in 33 years, echoed Harvey.
What are you doing in the river? Said Mahogany, breaking the loop of conversation.
I'm washing my clothes, said R.T.
But the water's filthy, said Irothea.
Yes, said R.T., but it's something I must do in order to become a great writer.
To become a great writer? Said Mahogany.
Yes, said R.T., for I have asked everyone I know how I might improve my work, and they have all said the same thing.
Devi sciacquare I panni in Arno.
Footnote. Alessandro Manzoni, author of I Promessi Sposi, returned to Florence before finishing the final draft of his novel in order to purify his language of the Milanese slang, or, as he put it, to sciacquare I panni in Arno, wash his clothes in the Arno.
So here I am, though I must admit it seems futile, for the river is contaminated with English, German, and Japanese.
What are you doing here?
We're looking for Ronaldo Dodici, said Irothea.
R.D., said R.T.,
that most immortal of mortals, that fountain which pours forth so great a stream of speech, that glory of poets and paragon of plagiarists.
Exactly, said Irothea. We want him to write our sequel.
Of course you do, said R.T., and who could blame you? For though I wrote the first drafts of Part 3 and 4 in 1979, I was never able to fashion them into the diaphanous prose the reader has come to expect. In fact, the more I worked on them, the more I realized I had said all I have to say in Parts 1 and 2, and that any further effort would be an endeavor in tautology. For that reason, I am grateful to R.D. for what he has done, and we have become good friends because of it. We're going to meet today in Monte Catini to celebrate the film contract for his Part 4. You're welcome to join us, if you like.
Let's go, said Mahogany, starting up the bank.
Okay, said Harvey on the airplane, setting down the manuscript. Let me get this straight. I was traveling in 1980 on a train to Florence. I went to the bathroom and slipped back into my form in 2013. Mahogany and I met Irothea again and accompanied her to Vagliali. In Vagliali, we were informed that another author, a Signore Ronaldo Dodici, had written a spurious sequel to the Roland Twelves, Parts 1 and 2. In Florence, we met Roland Twelves, and now he is going to take us to meet this new author.
Okay, 2013, going with Roland Twelves to meet Ronaldo Dodici.
Gotcha.